Today on Connecting Women in Insurance, we explore how starting as a registered nurse can open doors to a career in forensic consulting. From healthcare to insurance investigations, this episode shows how clinical expertise can shape a unique and impactful career. Hey everyone, welcome back to Connecting Women in Insurance with me, your host Julie. This podcast focuses on extraordinary women throughout the insurance industry and the journeys they have taken throughout their career. If you haven't already, please like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Today I have with me Ms. Mary Jorgensen. She is a nurse consultant with Remkes. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about you and what you do with Remkes right now.
Sure. So I am a registered nurse. Okay. I work with Remkes as a nurse consultant. I've been with Remkes since 2022.
Okay.
I primarily work from home, and that's great because I've been raising four boys over the last 23 years.
Oh, wow. You've been busy.
I have. Yes, I just, my oldest just graduated from college and has just joined the Tallahassee Fire Department as a firefighter.
Oh, so congratulations.
Happy. Thank you. One down, three to go. My other kid's going to graduate in December and he wants to go to law school, although people are trying to talk him out of it. And then his twin works for a flood insurance company, actually.
Ah, twins.
Uh-huh. And then my youngest is starting a senior year in high school. So being home and working as a consultant is, you know, really works out well. I also have a dog who's 2 years old and likes to have me home as well.
Yes. Okay.
So I'm always working as a consultant. I'm never really off, but I'm able to sort of balance, you know, what my family needs plus
that's nice.
Doing things that I want to do as well.
That is so, yes. Really nice. Well, so you started off with nursing. Tell me what made you decide on the insurance industry. How did you get from nursing? How did you start off there and get to here?
It was quite a journey. I started off clinically working in the intensive care unit as a young nurse, 19 years old.
Oh, wow. That is young.
Yes. I wasn't old enough to drink a beer, but I could push morphine. You know?
That was, yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but go ahead.
Those were fun times.
Yes.
And so from the clinical environment, I started working for the New York State Nurses Association as a union rep, a nurses union rep. So I saw a lot of problems in the hospital, helped to negotiate contracts, employment contracts, represented nurses in grievances and arbitrations, and that was very exciting.
Oh, I bet it was.
But I got burnt out from that, though.
I could see that.
And I was looking for some other way to use my clinical knowledge, but not be burnt out because I had just gave birth to my first son at the time, and that was the year 2001.
Oh, wow.
So I found a law firm in Manhattan who was looking for a critical care nurse to help them review medical records for litigation.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
It was fantastic. So I thought, well, that's all the job requirement was. Are you a critical care nurse that can review medical records? Absolutely. So I interviewed and they hired me. And my only stipulation was because the firm was in Manhattan and I lived in the suburbs of New York City, like outside of New York City.
Right.
And I had a young son at the time. I said, I need to leave the office by 3 p.m. And they were fine with that. So I was commuting back and forth to this law firm job and I loved it. But this is the seed that planted my passion for what I'm doing today. Because as part of that team, I was reviewing records for diet drug litigations. I was working for the firm who was representing the pharmaceutical company that distributed these diet drugs that allegedly caused valvular heart disease and pulmonary hypertension.
Okay.
And so there were hundreds of thousands of lawsuits filed against this company because of these allegations. And so my job with a team of nurses was to look through these records to find out which are the real cases and which are the fraudulent not real cases.
That would
be
fascinating.
And so I became really interested in and blown away at how many lawyers and adjusters, like how many people are looking to cash in whatever it takes.
Right.
And lie. They just lie. So I love that investigative type work to find out, well, let me find the evidence. Do they really have what they're alleging?
Oh, that sounds like so much fun.
I loved it. And I thought, oh, I'm never going to leave this law firm. I'm going to stay here for the rest of my career. But then I got pregnant with twins.
Ouch.
And so I had a little baby at home, and then I was pregnant with twins, and it was
a lot,
you know. So, and I was paying a lot of money for daycare, like probably over $20,000 a year in daycare.
Good Lord.
Back 20 years ago. So I decided to go back to the hospital and just work nights and take care of my boys during the day. And then I got pregnant with a fourth boy. And things became hard because I didn't marry for money.
Right.
I married for love. So I always have to work. And my husband and I decided to move to Florida to franchise a 7-Eleven store and hopefully have a more simple life.
Right.
So we did. And I, again, working as a nurse in Florida was very different than New York. And I was looking for another opportunity where I could review medical records.
Right.
So I did find a job working for the Quality Improvement Organization for Florida and California at the time, which is a Medicare Quality Improvement Organization, to review records to investigate Medicare beneficiary recipients who were complaining about their care. So they would file a complaint. We would look at the complaint. We would request the records. We go through the records to see, is there anything in the record that substantiates the complaint? And if so, I would be the one to identify it, push it to a doctor to say yes or no, and then I would communicate with the family and the patient about what happened with their care in the hospital that they were unhappy about. And I was really good at that work, that they promoted me to management, and they wanted me to build a team of nurses and social workers to take these calls. Anyway, the short story, the contract ended, and I ended up not liking management. I kind of liked it just to do my own thing.
Right.
So I found a law firm in Manhattan, a law firm in St. Petersburg, looking for a nurse paralegal to help them review medical records for medical malpractice defense, personal injury defense, nursing home negligence defense. And I was like getting flashbacks from when I worked at that law firm in Manhattan. Like, that's what I want to do.
Right.
So I worked for them for 5 years or so, and I got itchy because I felt like I just had like a ball and chain to my desk.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just ripping out chronologies and reports, and attorneys would just copy and paste my work into theirs. And I didn't feel very appreciated or valued. And I really felt like I was capable of doing so much more.
Mm-hmm.
So I subcontracted on my own and I left that firm, and I worked for a few different companies who work on personal injury cases.
Okay.
And I found Rimkus through a neighbor. I went to a neighbor's house who was having a little gathering to say thank you for being a good neighbor. His wife had passed away, and so he had a little neighbor party.
Right.
And talking with another neighbor about what I did, he's like, I think we need someone like you at Rimkus. I'm like, oh, well, tell me about Rimkus. So I was hired at Rimkus to help the experts, who are biomechanical engineers, human factors experts, toxicology experts, but primarily the biomechanical engineers. They get retained by people all over the country to investigate car accidents to see did the mechanism of injury, you know, cause their complaints, actually have an impact on what they're alleging. So again, it's like investigative type work. So me and another nurse would review these records for help review these records, do summaries for these experts, and we would basically help them review that part of it because we know how to dig in a medical record.
Right.
And reviewing these cases for these experts, I want to say like 95% of the cases that I was looking at were, I mean, in my opinion, not viable. Like they didn't have merit. And I'm thinking to myself, how does a car accident go from, it doesn't look like there's any injuries, to, oh, I have a herniation. Oh, now I have a traumatic brain injury. Oh, now I need $2 million.
Right.
And like, how does this claim evolve when from my perspective, there is no claim?
Mm-hmm.
How did this claim get to this expert where they're going to spend thousands of dollars to investigate when I don't think we have any substance here? So I decided to talked to Rimkus and I said, you know, we can do more with our clients. I'd like to help our insurance companies that we serve, help them identify early claim investigations where we can identify the claims that have merit versus don't have merit. Like whatever I can do to help in that aspect. And that's kind of how I got involved in working with insurance. Is I started going to these conferences with insurance adjusters and the realm of all y'all, listening to what your needs are, listening to what your struggles are when you review claims and when you're doing it related to personal injury, related to premises liability, slip and falls, and so forth. Because I've worked with these experts on so many different cases, like accidents, whether it be trucking accidents, car accidents, falls, anything that results in personal injury, I kind of know what they're looking for. I kind of know where to find the evidence. So I get hired now by insurance companies to do an analysis of their demand packages and also of their bills to tell them immediately, yes, this case has merit, or no, it doesn't, and this is why. And if a case does go to litigation, my report has everything they need to mitigate, negotiate a settlement, that kind of thing, with the facts. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I'm at right now, and I'm excited because there seems to be a need in preventing these nuclear verdicts, especially with these insurance companies who are just constantly bombarded with very minuscule claims that turn out to be bigger claims, and it's costing them a lot of money. So I've been very helpful to help our insurance agents with that, for sure.
Okay, so because I am extremely fascinated, like I'm trying not to sit here with my mouth open, but
I know I talk too much.
No. I would love for you to, if you can, just kind of off the top of your head, give me an example. So say someone is in a car accident and it's just, I don't even know what to say.
Can you share my pattern of collusion?
Take me down the road of this is what it would be for to be legitimate and what we would look for, because I can't even think of an injury all of a sudden, but.
Yeah, no, so this is the typical pattern of what I see. And again, every claim I get, I have to look at I try to remove my bias.
Right.
Even though 95% of the cases I look at, I think I know where it's going to go. I have to put that aside. This is, you know.
Right, and start fresh, because every claim is different.
Absolutely, 100%. So I keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. But then as I go through the record, the patterns that I'll see is someone will have a car accident. It's a low speed accident.
Okay.
It might be a side swipe or a rear end impact at a red light. Low speed. So when you look at the pictures of the vehicles, there's a dent. There's a, you know, a scratch.
Right.
Maybe there's four people in that car who are all claiming, oh, my neck, oh, my back. So I look at the record. Did EMS respond? Did police respond? If they did and they got assessed and they were taken to the hospital, okay, what does EMS say? A lot of times EMS is not called. Police isn't even called. It's like it's such a minor accident, they don't even have a police report. And then maybe 2 weeks down the line, all of a sudden you get a chiropractor report saying my client was in a car accident 2 weeks ago. And he thought his neck pain was going to go away, but it didn't. So now we're going to evaluate him. And you look to see on the paperwork, this person retained an attorney, and the attorney referred him to this chiropractor.
Mm.
So they go to the chiropractor, and the chiropractor and the patient will write down, oh, I have neck pain, had my car accident 2 weeks ago. Then the chiropractor will do an evaluation and say, oh, you have neck pain. Do you have tingling in your hands and arms and feet? Do you have low back pain? Does it travel? So when a chiropractor evaluates, in their exam notes, they'll put a whole bunch of other symptoms that the person didn't initially complain about. Just so do they have an excuse to now do imaging. See CAT scans or MRIs of the neck and of the spine. And when you do the imaging, oh, now, because they have these symptoms, that warrants the imaging.
Right.
And a lot of times I'll see, before they order the MRIs, do I have the approval of the attorney before I order this MRI? And so it's sort of like attorney-driven care instead of doctor-driven care.
Okay. That makes sense.
And so they'll go to these, they'll go get their MRIs, and the MRIs will might show degenerative disc disease, a herniation.
Okay.
And if that person has never had a scan before in the past, the doctor will look at that and say, must be from the car accident. And all of a sudden now, but the doctor will tell the patient, you have a herniation from this car accident, and so you need to go to a pain management specialist. So they'll go to chiropractic treatments, you know, twice a week, and now they're going to go to a pain management doctor who's going to tell them, you need spinal injections. And so then they'll overcharge and administer spinal injections because of these herniations. And then a couple of months down the line, they'll refer them to a surgeon, and the surgeon will see them, and the surgeon just does surgery, let's be honest. The surgeon will say, oh, you've exhausted all your conservative treatment for this herniation, we need to do surgery. And then they'll go and get fusion surgery. Meanwhile, I have to look at this. Did this herniation happen before the accident? Because you've never had a scan before. How do we know that it happened? So that's where my biomechanical engineers come in to see, does the force act? What kind of forces are needed to create a herniation?
Right.
And the side swipes and low speed rear end accidents don't do it. But it's what a jury believes. So
right.
If a plaintiff has a good case and they're going to push forward, it's one doctor against another. But what I'm seeing is there's a vendor collusion going on with an attorney, a plaintiff's attorney, who has an agreement, probably unwritten, with a chiropractor and a pain management doctor and a physical therapy group and an imaging center and a surgeon. And they're all working together to control the narrative that this person was injured and deserves a big settlement or a jury trial.
Okay.
Even though, in my opinion,
right,
they're not really injured.
Right.
They just have muscle strains and pains that will go away with rest and ice.
So, and I don't want to get too off track, but I really am into this. But there probably are cases, though, that you come across, even with low impact, where maybe a week or so later, someone, maybe minor whiplash, or they had a little something that they didn't have before. More than likely, even if they didn't call EMS and all, would they just like go see their doctor? That's the pattern you see. They just go see their doctor and talk to them, and then they contact, you know, they kind of go that way. They don't really necessarily go grab an attorney right away. Is that like, if they're truly injured, do they generally just go see their doctor?
No, surprisingly.
Oh.
A lot of times I'll see is they don't go to their doctor. They drive down the highway and they call the billboard that says, call me.
Ah, but I mean, for those that are legitimately injured.
Yes, the legitimate ones will have, like, EMS will respond, or even if they don't, like even if 2 weeks later, like, oh, they'll go get checked. But see, if you have a serious injury, say from like a herniation, for the most, it's an acute event, you're going to feel something immediately. It won't be two
right.
weeks later. If you're having aches and pains 2 weeks later, that could happen. But it's a muscle strain and pain.
Got it.
Physical therapy, Motrin, ice, rest, that's enough. That will heal. Or even without those treatments, it'll heal over
right.
time. You don't need chiropractic adjustments. You don't need spinal injections. They're
True.
Way overused and abused, which raises the medical costs to hopefully balloon out these settlement payments.
Yeah. Okay. That is so fascinating. I think I would just get way too caught up in my work if I did what you did. Like, it would be hard to walk away from it because it's like reading a really good mystery.
Yes. And, you know, I found too is I thought I'd be really helpful in that realm, but the second piece that the insurance folks need from me is the billing piece, because not only are they pushing forward these treatment records, they're also pushing forward these bills. And when you look at the bills, they don't add up to what they're producing in the treatment records. So you need someone with a keen eye to look at the bills and say, oh, they're billing for a rotator cuff tear, but really they just have like a shoulder strain or whatever. When they did the injections, the way they build for them, they build them all the procedures individually instead of together, because there's different codes for each type of procedure, and based on the code, there's a cost to it, and so they'll change the way they code things for a higher bill, and so then as a coder and a biller, I also look at that, like, this is what the record says, and this is what the billing says. And even though this is what the billing says, this is really what it should be based on my review when I compare everything together. And so instead of just saying, oh, it's a $10,000 case, let's just, you know, settle. You know, the insurance agent, they want to be able to push claims off their desk. You know, they're going to get them in, they want to get them out. So I try to help with, give them clues as to which ones, you know, need to be addressed and which ones don't. And I look at both medical and billing.
That's very interesting. Like, that would be so much fun.
It is fun. Yeah. And so it's like, wow, you know, it's kind of, I come full circle. Like, as a nurse, I've worked in the ICU. I've worked in EMS. Mm-hmm. I've worked in trauma. I've worked in all elements because I've always worked full time.
Right.
So I'm very well medically trained. And also I'm experienced with the litigation aspect of it. And I know the tips and the tricks of the trade of what these people try to get away with. And so, you know, I could be of service.
Yes, that is really interesting. So, in all of this, your journey throughout, did you ever make a mistake or a decision in your career and you thought, I'm going to have to start over. That's it. I'm either going to get fired, quit, or just whatever. I mean, but you learned from it. And it helped you later, or even helped someone else later?
You know, if I could be a little vulnerable here.
Yeah.
There's been certain jobs that I've had mm-hmm. where I might have like a conflict with someone because I see something different. You know, I see something different. I'm looking at something differently than someone else,
right.
And there's like a conflict. And so I've seen a pattern where when things get kind of hard in a workplace for me and I'm struggling with like personalities or instead of trying to work it out, mm-hmm. I immediately would be like, oh, let me go check the job boards and see what other kind of job I can get. Like just kind of like change focus.
Right.
You know? And so I've become resilient in, you know, so as I've taken on different types of roles in nursing and now this role as a consultant, I've learned to push through those tough times where, like, if I just ride it out, I'll develop those skills and I'll be more confident in these circumstances later on, where I don't just have to turn around and look for another job. I'm going to work this out and I'm going to find a common ground. And so I've learned how to be flexible and easier. I'm always easy to work with, but I've learned how to be flexible and to work on issues that can be resolved versus me just running away from them. So
that's a valuable lesson to learn, because learning to be flexible, it sounds super easy. It's really not, because everybody has their opinion and everybody thinks their opinion is right. And it's once you get, I don't know, I think once you get into your 40s, you're like, you know, it, maybe I'm not always right. Like in your 30s, you're still like trying to push through and, you know, just make things happen, kids, work, whatever. But, I think once you learn that how to be flexible and work with someone who has a different perspective or a different opinion, and you navigate that, and it takes some time because not everybody's willing to navigate that with you. Not everybody's willing to work with you. You know, they've got their opinion, and that's just it, and you figure it out. But for the most part, people will, and I think that's a huge lesson to learn, to not run and to face it and to work it out. And it's not always comfortable, and sometimes it's awkward, but in the end, it's worth it.
Absolutely.
I mean, kudos to you, because that is, I can see too, where you would have been that way, being 19, and in with all these people who are older than you and more experienced in a lot of ways, and not just in work, but life. So it would be like, I don't know how to deal with this, because I would have been that way, and I'm going to look for another job.
Yes.
But finding your footing and figuring out, okay, it's time to stand still and it's time to talk it out. That's huge. And everybody gets to that point. It gets to that place at some point. And when they do it, it's very empowering in a lot of ways and freeing, because even though someone has a different opinion, that doesn't mean you can't work together and be stronger together, because you're going to see things differently. And that's not a bad thing. So that's awesome. I really like that.
Thank you. And it's helped me in this work now, working with different consultants, mm-hmm. because we all might see something that, you know, from a different perspective, but it helps put the truth together and all the facts.
Oh yeah. Oh, I can see that. So what advice would you give to women listening that want to move forward in their career, no matter the industry? I mean, and what you just said is a good piece of advice, but if they're wanting to move up or do something new, or because you've tried a lot of things, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to find their local Toastmasters Club. Toastmasters International has been around for a long time. Well over 100 years. You're familiar with Toastmasters?
I am. I've not gone to one. The one locally, I can't make the meetings. Like, it's in an awkward time. But
yes.
Everybody who talks about it raves about it.
Let me say, when I started working with the biomechanical engineers, every week we have a call, mm-hmm. where everyone gets on the call and talks about, like, maybe we review a paper or talk about a case. So we kind of, you know, everyone's on the same page and we learn together. One of the experts has suggested to the group that everyone join Toastmasters, because it will improve the way you communicate. It'll improve the way others perceive you. So, like, for instance, a lot of these experts testify and a jury is listening to them. So if they're not speaking clearly, if they speak with an accent and their English isn't very good, the jury's going to side with the person they feel has the most credibility and the one they connect with. So if you can improve upon the way you present yourself to other people, mm-hmm. that helps. So on my own, knowing that I probably had to do speaking engagements and education, mm-hmm. For potential clients, I'm a bedside nurse. I'm not a speaker, right? So I said, I need Toastmasters.
Right.
So I joined my local Toastmasters. I've been there about a year and a half, and that has changed the whole trajectory of how I see myself, mm-hmm. how I feel about myself and my career. I have more confidence. I've met people. Like, at the club, everyone is there to help each other improve, whatever that may be, as far mm-hmm. as your speaking, your confidence, and so forth. So that's my biggest suggestion. Join your local Toastmasters. You will get so much out of it, and your career will definitely get a bump, for sure.
I agree. That is an excellent piece of advice, and one I would have never thought of, and I don't know why, but that is an excellent piece of advice.
And it's fun, too.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Are you improving yourself, you're having fun, and you're meeting genuinely good people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're gonna have a few fun questions, and I'm going to ask them. Just answer off the top of your head. There's no right or wrong.
Oh, I'm so boring. Okay. I am.
You're not. So what is your favorite hobby or pastime?
Toastmasters. I love giving. You know, honestly, I wanted to write a book. I've had so many funny stories in my time in nursing, raising my four boys. I've been married for 27 years. I got some funny stories there. I thought I would write a book. But honestly, like, when I go to Toastmasters, we put together speeches, and I'm actually competing in a humorous speech contest. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to write a book. I'm going to write little mini stories and tell them, like, in an animated way on stage. And actually, I'm going to start taking improv classes because...
Those are fun.
I want to do more fun things.
My youngest daughter took acting and modeling classes, and we would drive to Atlanta all the time, back and forth, and the improv was the best. Like, I would help out. I didn't get to get involved in any of them just because I wasn't there to do that, but they were so fun and funny, and it really does pull you out of yourself. You know, yes. It pulls you out of your comfort zone, and you realize there's nothing to be scared or embarrassed about. Like, you just be you and do whatever it's required or whatever they're requiring at that moment. But it's a lot of fun. So you're going to enjoy that.
I'm excited.
Yeah, you're going to have to video it and send it to me.
Okay. All right. I will. She said it's going to be like a whose line it is anyway kind of format.
Oh, yeah. That'll be so much fun. Okay, so what's the best compliment you ever received, personally or professionally?
It would have to be from my husband telling me that I'm a great mother and a great wife.
That is awesome.
Like at the end of, 20 years of marriage and seeing me at my worst and at my best, that it means a lot when you hear that.
That is wonderful.
With sincerity.
I love that. What is your biggest pet peeve?
Being late for something because my husband wasn't born with an internal clock and neither were our four boys. So I feel like I have to be on top of everyone to make sure that they get out of the house on time. And so it drives me crazy when... If you're supposed to be somewhere at 9 o'clock and you don't start getting ready until 9 o'clock, that's wrong. That's a pet peeve of mine.
Yes.
It's disrespectful.
Yes. Have you ever set the clocks up?
Yes. And I've put appointments on the family calendar and I pre-time them so that they get there early, hopefully, instead of late. Yes. I do all of that. Whatever I need to do. And now, when they're on their own, they're on their own. At least my firefighter now has threats from his chief, so he has to, he doesn't have as much looking after him anymore.
They will get it. That's funny.
Yeah.
But I can see that being late would really bother you. Okay. So if you could have any animal in the world, no matter what kind it is, what would it be and why?
It would be a koala.
Why is that?
Because they're so cute. And I kind of had a rough childhood. Uh-huh. And in second grade, I was gifted from one of the boys in my class a little stuffed koala. And that koala bear became like my comfort everything as I was growing up. So I think I want a koala bear.
Oh, no. Nice.
Cute and soft. And
that would be fun.
My friend. I carry him around like this,
He could ride on your back.
Yes. Why not? My koala bear.
I love that. I've always liked koala bears too. But I think I would probably choose, because you really don't need to separate them, I would probably choose a pair of elephants.
Where would you keep those elephants?
I'm just saying, if you could have them, that would require land. We're not in the real world.
Yes,
it
would require land.
I mean, my 5 acres wouldn't hold them, but I think they would be fun. That or a platypus, just because, a platypus. Why not?
Yeah, why not? I do have 3 parakeets and a dog, and that's enough.
Yeah.
Because I'm home, so that's a lot.
Yeah, we have way more. So you have... You really have like full circled this, your career, which has been a pretty amazing journey. You and I have talked before this, and then I've learned more stuff today. What do you, what direction do you think the next leg of your journey will take you, personally and or professionally? You can talk about both or just one, but where do you see yourself kind of navigating towards?
You know, I'm really excited to grow my client base with what I'm doing right now in assisting insurance companies and self-insured companies with analyzing cases and billing records. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that I get busier so that I can add more nurses like myself to our team, and then we can have a team of nurses that are helping and assisting. Nice. That's my professional goal, mm-hmm. because I see the value in what we're providing, and I've already had some clients say, "Oh, you know, I could sign a contract with you, but it's only me. Like I need to be a bigger entity. I can't do it all." So ultimately, professionally, I'd like to do that. And, you know, I'm 50 now, right? And my youngest is turning 18 next month. And so I need to catch up on retirement savings. And, you know, come when I'm like 60 years old, I'm hoping that I have a couple of grandkids. I'm hoping that I'm still working. Because, when you love what you do,
it's not work anymore.
It's not work anymore. You know, so I'm right now, and professionally and personally, I'm creating a life for myself that I don't want to retire from.
Right.
So that I can do what I do and I enjoy it. And I also want to, you know, I would like to be able to work part-time in my retirement and enjoy my grandkids and my kids before I'm dead in my 70s. Because nobody lives past like 75 in my family. So,
well, you might be.
I think I only have a good 25 years left anyway.
You never know. You never know. Plus, you got to save up to go to Australia and play with the koalas.
Yes, you're right. I want to travel. Yes.
Well, now let me ask you this. On the adding nurses, it's just a question that popped in my head just because of working with claims. Would you want them? Obviously, they can work remote, but like, is there a specific state or whatever that requires the nurse be licensed in that state in order to give any kind of formal recommendation or do what you do, or is that not a requirement?
The nurse should be licensed in the state where they work or live, mm-hmm. and it would be best if they're either a life care planner or a certified professional biller or a certified professional coder. Mm-hmm. And with those elements, like, you know, some nurses want to maybe let their RN expire, but don't let their license expire because there's so many things you can do with it,
right,
that don't require you to be in the bedside per se. So just to keep your RN license, and it doesn't matter if your license is in Florida, you can still review cases in New York.
Okay.
Doing the kind of work that we're doing.
Okay.
You just have to be knowledgeable about the billing laws across the country, right, in different states.
Because different states require okay, so it is very similar to what an adjuster would need as far as licensing and things like that, or just knowing and understanding the differences in the states. Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yep. And because we can all work remotely, it can be done.
Yeah,
it's easy.
That's really nice. So as we come to a close, I do thank you very much for doing this with me. I love this little niche you've carved out for yourself in the insurance industry, because it really is fascinating. But do you have any parting words? Is there anything like the main takeaway you would want to leave with everyone who views us?
Sure. You know, life is short. And when I first started my career, when I felt a little fire in my soul, a little passion, like I did when I went to that first law firm, mm-hmm. Find your passion and go make a mess of it. Go dig in and do your passion, whatever that takes. Because even if you don't get the outcome you think you want, you're doing what you love. Mm-hmm. And that in and of itself is success.
Well said. Well said. All right. Well, thank you again. And I'm sure we will be talking again soon.
I would love to. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome.